and this is actually episode 100 of I'll Have a Beer and Talk. Hooray! Hooray, hooray. It's exciting. I finally managed to get everything together. All the stars have aligned, and we even have a studio audience here. They're really happy. Woo! Yeah, that was amazing. Thank you, folks who are here. So I'm going to do things a little differently. Yes, I did say we, because there's someone in here with me. Hello, person.
What?
Hi. Who are you?
Person. It's your lovely companion, and my name is Jen Woodward.
She who is my wife. Yeah, so we are doing things a little differently. I usually prepare quite a bit for each full-length episode that I write my copy out and work on, you know, things that I call jokes. I don't know if you consider them jokes. And, you know, kind of do a little bit of research in each story. But this time I decided for the 100th episode to do things just a little differently. Both of us have chosen three stories, and we've read them individually, and we've written just kind of like bullet points. But we're just going to talk about them with each other while we have beer.
Beer.
Hooray, beer. We both love beer, and we like talking to each other, because that's what couples do, right?
Yeah, I would hope so by now. If we didn't like talking to each other, this whole thing, I don't know.
Yeah, 18 years, something like that. Yeah, we do have good conversations. Not always requiring beer.
No.
But we're gonna have beer with our conversations today. Like I said, I haven't pre-written just pretty much anything about this, so I'm going to be stumbling over my own words quite a bit. So this is a grand experiment. It's probably going to be a disaster, but we'll see how it works out.
Not on my watch.
You always keep me on the straight and narrow.
What are we drinking today?
Thank you. You're keeping me on track. So we got three beers chosen randomly from a local bottle shop. So the randomizer isn't actually in effect, but... You know what? Let's play the randomizer anyway. I don't want it to feel neglected. All right, it's spinning. It's got three beers to choose from, so we'll choose one of the three. I'm excited. Hooray! All right. The beer that we're having first is Woodland Empire's Moondog, a 5.3% ABV Northwest Amber. And Jen is going to open it for both of us. Ooh, cans. It's very effervescent. So, ambers are, according to beerafrica.com, primarily a catch-all for any beer less than a dark ale in color, ranging from amber to deep red hues. This style of beer tends to focus on the malts, but hop character can range from low to high. Expect a balanced beer with toasted malt characters and a light fruitiness in most examples.
Smells good.
It smells nicely hoppy and a little like a low-key resiny and some fruit, almost apple kind of sense.
Hey, prost.
Woo! It is very much a picture-perfect color amber, and let's find out what it tastes like.
Sweet. You know, nice, steady amber.
Yeah, the smell actually matches the taste. I feel like it's kind of got apple fruitiness and a little bit of resiny on the back end. This is wonderful.
Yeah, but that resiny is so super mild.
It's not like Pliny the Elder. It's definitely not a, whoa, no, this is a lot of resin in here.
It's a really, you know, smooth ride.
All right, so we're going to flip a coin to see who gets to read the first story. Let me get my coin here, and there we go. Oh, I guess we should have chosen heads or tails.
Heads.
Then I'll choose tails. Let me do that again. Let me just collect the coin back here in my hand. You know, it takes skill to make it sound exactly the same the second time. And I can't see the coin from here. What side did it land on?
I'm pretty sure it landed on my side.
You chose
heads.
Heads. Okay. Memory like a sieve. All right, so what story did you find interesting from the internet last week?
I would like to talk with you about goats.
Goats! I love goats!
Totes my goats. So, I see over on earther.com that Earther.
not Mars or Mooner. Berserker.
Sorry. Renee Lewis was writing up a little bit about how goats are now being used as a tool to help with forest fire prevention in the Northwest, which, you know, I think you've talked a little bit about on past episodes.
Well, our personal experience with fire, but also that
just
Pacific
the whole
Northwest is on fire.
The whole still, West Coast has been on fire. So this is actually a pretty, you know, even though goats are fun and frolicking, a pretty good and serious kind of story.
So but, how are they preventing forest fires? Are they telling people to put out fires like Smokey the Bear?
Smokey the Goat. No, they are being rented out, which, like, people may have heard of rentable goats to clear yard debris.
Actually, I think I did a story about them cleaning up a park, like, probably a year and a half ago. Yeah, so I'm familiar with it.
Yeah.
But the basic idea is that they're kind of released, and they just naturally eat. You know, they do what goats do. They just eat brush.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the part, the fire prevention part, is that they eat all that debris, like the underbrush, that really can add extreme fuel to these fires and make them much stronger and spread more quickly. And you know, the whole thing is just bad. So some other reasons the goats are pretty awesome to use
they're cute.
Those
weird alien eyes.
For sure. But they also can handle difficult terrain. You know, it might be a spot that you don't want to get machinery into because it might not be as effective. Stuck. They don't leave any debris behind.
They must clean up their excrement.
Not that kind of debris, but
they eat
everything.
Tinder, yeah.
So they are the removal of the underbrush. And their digestive system also will break down certain seeds so that they don't grow back as easily in some cases. So that can also be an effective suppression of things that they want to keep from growing back. We have horrible blackberry problems, Himalayan blackberry, you know, invasives here. And
oh yeah, I know our chickens actually take care of that for us. They just eat the
sometimes
the sprouts if they can get them when they first start up. Yeah. Once they grow, that they're
but the, those goats to them, would but totally like make quick work of them. Yeah, so it's a good thing all around, and it's becoming more popular, and this article was mostly about it in Washington, but I'm sure it's also becoming a more popular tool in Oregon as well.
So is this a pilot program, or is this an actual commissioned one-time thing, or is this a continuing project?
No, this is just them talking about that there are certain companies that she talked to that are doing this, but they are, like, have more work than they can keep up with, basically becoming a bigger thing.
So there's a business idea in that. You can get a bunch of goats, put them in little firefighter outfits, and kind of loan them out to the county, the forestry service.
Loan doesn't imply business, but okay.
I see maybe
a flaw in your business plan. Just saying.
All right.
Anyway, that's all I got to say about goats.
Goats. Hey, I know I like crows, and you like crows too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just want to reconfirm
that. Sorry, there's a crow in here. Oh, my God.
Hey, crow. Hey, and you hate cigarette butts littered everywhere, right?
It's gross.
Big problem.
It's kind of gross.
Well, I was reading on the Next Web that two Dutch industrial designers, and these are very Dutch names, so I'm going to mangle them, of course, Ruben van der Vleuten and Bob Spijkman, came up with a concept that basically will involve crows and removing cigarette butts.
Sweet.
They noticed a lot of butts in a park in Amsterdam, which I guess they both frequent, and they started brainstorming ways to get rid of the cigarette butts, and gradually, the thought process brought them to, why don't we train crows to pick up cigarette butts?
Gradually, while they were, like, smoking out, you mean?
Well, I mean, first they thought about using robots, and then they decided that that's just way, way too complicated. Then they thought about, you know, maybe we could train animals to do it. What animals are common in cities? They first thought pigeons. And then they started looking into it, and there's actually, surprisingly, not a lot of research about pigeon intelligence and if they can actually be trained or not beyond just using them as homing pigeons, which
I think pigeons are probably surprisingly smart.
Well, yeah, they're just dirty doves. Doves aren't dumb.
Yeah. I don't think.
They make specific sounds when they cry.
Sorry.
God. I don't know where that came from. That was weird. But again, they basically couldn't find any research to pull from about pigeon intelligence and ways people have trained them, which actually I think they didn't look hard enough. But anyway, then they decided on crows, because that's another species that is intelligent, trainable, and hangs out in human cities. And they also have been shown multiple times, as I've mentioned on the show, they like to figure stuff out, and they're really clever birds.
They're very smart, resourceful.
Once they decided to see if they can get crows to get rid of our cigarette butts, they met a man by the name of Joshua Klein. And Klein created an open source crow vending machine called the Crow Box.
What?
Yes.
What the hell? You're making this up.
No, it's a box that gradually trains crows to collect specific objects to exchange for food. And it involves a kind of a multi-step process, but relatively simple because the way crows can problem solve. Step one is that they put the object that they want the crows to collect next to a piece of food on a platform on the box. So when the crows come check out the box and see the platform and see food and the object, so like, oh, food. And they start associating that object with the food. Then once they've gotten some crows used to just getting that free food on the platform, they actually remove the food but leave the item on the little platform. And then when the crows land on the platform expecting to find food, a piece of food drops out of the bottom of the box.
Let me guess, the item is going to be a cigarette butt.
Well, the way the crow box works, it's any item that they can conceivably pick up. The original concept of the crow box was that they would collect coins. So it'd be crows collecting money for you, which is actually smarter, but less of a good thing for the environment there.
That's a business plan.
Crows will collect money for me in exchange for food. Yeah, it was coins in exchange for peanuts in the original concept.
Hmm.
So the crows were literally working for peanuts.
Oh, poor crows.
The third step with the crow box is that they make it so that the food is not dispensed unless the crow actually pushes the object off the platform into a receptacle. So basically when the crow lands and expects the food to drop out of the bottom, now they see nothing's going on, so they start poking around. Eventually they knock the object into the receptacle and then the food comes out. Then there's a fourth step where the human operator basically takes the object off the platform, then spreads a whole bunch of those objects around the crow box and see if the crows start picking up the objects to get the food.
Wow.
So the crows are smart. They'll pick this up pretty quickly, and they actually would teach other members of their murders, if I'm not mistaken, with things like life skills like this. Or they can see their crow friends doing it, and they go, oh, I can do that too, and get food. So if you get enough boxes around a certain area, like a park, the crows can become trash collectors, and they get paid in peanuts.
Yeah, that's cool. It's so many steps talking about it that sounds quite complex to make it happen, but I'm sure, like, the reality of it is not as complex.
Yeah, I think it just takes a little bit of patience, but, you know, crows are opportunistic and they're clever, so they'll work with you for the most part. As long as
if it was a human, forget about it.
Getting people to exchange cigarette butts for peanuts? Yeah, they're not
going to
figure it out.
It would be pretty much like, wait, how many steps? I don't think so.
Yeah, and there was a bit of a concern that the crows picking up cigarette butts, they get all the nasty chemicals inherent in cigarette filters, but they kind of figured they're just holding the beak, they're not eating it, and they're just kind of carrying it.
So you mean they're not smoking the cigarettes?
Exactly. That it shouldn't, the all the chemicals shouldn't affect them that much. And there's also that research that birds are using cigarette butts to basically use them as an insecticide in their nests, so they are interacting with these chemicals already.
They are probably pretty savvy to know that, like, they don't want to ingest those things. Birds are pretty good about knowing what is good to eat and what isn't.
Yeah, crows are smart.
Hey, so I'm thirsty.
Are you now? Does that mean it's time to open up another one of our miniature flight of beers?
Yes, please. I would like to open up the Crooked Fence Brewing Company from Idaho, the Blue-Footed Booby.
Booby.
Blue-Footed Booby Cucumber Tart Saison. It is a 5% ABV, and sounds delicious.
Yeah, Saisons. I've mentioned them several times. They're kind of one of my favorite styles of beer. And it's actually more a style of brewing than a style of beer. And I know I've said this multiple times, but they are traditional Belgian farmhouse ales that are traditionally brewed in the winter so they can be enjoyed all summer long. I equate them as being like liquid sunset. I don't know if you have another, a different descriptor for how your experiences are with Saisons.
Just that I find them to be delicious.
Magically delicious.
Yeah, definitely better than Lucky Charms. All right, I'm going to open it up.
All right. Oh, you know, I forgot we actually had a beer mic. Again, we're actually, you're using the beer mic, so we don't have a specific beer mic, but...
I am the beer mic.
I had forgotten we had a transition sound effect, so I'll just play that right now. That's the sound that you chose earlier today, so I hope you enjoyed it.
We've got to at least do it one more time when we open the next beer.
Next beer.
So I was going to talk to you
a little bit.
I'm just drinking it.
Well, people listening at home have no idea what the sensations are because all you hear is us opening it. So it's kind of a pale yellow, a little tiny bit cloudy in color, has a white head. Smells a lot. Smells like actual real cucumber with that kind of vegetable
edge
to it.
Indeed it does. Oh, refreshing.
It's like a carbonated cucumber water that happens to be beer.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. It literally tastes like cucumber water.
Yeah, but it has a little bit more of flavor than just cucumber water. I feel like I can taste that Saison in there.
Yeah, a little fruity and a little bit of bitterness, but it's like blends right in with all of the cucumberness.
Yeah, it's very refreshing. I can imagine on a hot day that you could go through quite a few of these.
Well, that's the point of Saison. All right, so I cut you off. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about some of your favorite, one of your favorite subjects, which is space.
Space!
So, as you can imagine, on long space travel, you might get kind of stressed out, right?
After you get over the excitement of being in space. I can see you might get a little
So this crazy. This story on geek.com is about how one way that they're looking into stress relief for astronauts, which is gardening.
I thought you were going to say porn.
No, that's a different story on a different website. No, this is about gardening and basically saying that there's research being done at the University of Florida about the benefits of gardening and relieving stress in space, and they're just trying to kind of look at it as a potential way to make people more comfortable and happy and less stir crazy in the vacuum of space.
Yeah, I remember there's a story about the ISS has a module called Veg One that's kind of a hydroponic space-based lettuce factory. Not factory, but gardening thing. I'm struggling for the word, but
yeah. Well, you know, in reading this, I really was thinking about how if you can watch something grow and flourish, no matter what environment you're in, it's helpful and it relaxes you and makes you feel connected and calm, because you can then see something changing that you put water on, you know, watch it develop. And I can imagine that when you're in a very confined space, like a spaceship, that would be very helpful because there's not a lot of, it's probably a pretty sterile environment, a lot of changes happening in that space.
Which definitely having a controlled environment makes it easier to grow stuff too.
Yeah. And so also the benefit of, I would imagine, better air quality, depending on how many plants you're growing, and you could then have a food source if you're going on a really long space travel mission.
As well as an oxygen source.
Yeah, exactly. So, seems like kind of a no-brainer. I'm not sure why this is like new research, like, ooh, gardening in space. But I'm sure that they have lots of controls and things that they need to do to make sure that they're not going to make a, what was the crazy plant called in Little Shop of Horrors?
Oh, Audrey too.
Yeah, that they're not going to somehow, by having plants in space, that
the green
some
slime.
Madness isn't going to happen.
Or the thing from another world. All the space vegetables.
Yeah. So it seems like a good thing, again.
Yeah, I think stress relief is definitely I agree with you. It's surprising they haven't done much research into it, because there was a famous incident when Skylab was still in use that the three-man crew were so tired of being so fully booked day in, day out doing experiments, they actually mutinied and refused to take any commands for like a full day.
Yeah.
So I would have thought the research into stress relief would happen right then and there. I know that their mutiny did affect the way that Mission Control organizes the astronauts' days to give them actually leisure time so they can cool off.
To garden.
Yeah, but that's a good solution. And it's kind of funny you mentioned that it's very relaxing to have water and watch things form, because that sounds an awful lot like making paper.
And wouldn't say.
By a sheer coincidence, it's time for our ad read from the show's sponsor, which I think you're the embodiment of the show's sponsor, literally.
Yeah, well, I would say that we, in some respects, we both are. Yeah, that the show is pretty much brought to you folks out there from us. Yeah, from we are.
That was
really
sponsor,
awkward.
Technically, but you're actually more the sponsor.
I'm definitely more. I'm like probably 70% or 75 or 80 or 85% of Pulp and Deckel. Anyway, in case you didn't know, which I think we just established that you firmly know, Pulp and Deckel is Portland's only community handmade papermaking studio. Its mission is to keep the art of papermaking alive with workshops, demonstrations, creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products, and working with artists and creating all styles of art through the medium of papermaking. You can browse the rotating selection of workshops, inquire about custom orders, take an online class, and check out all the amazing things we do by visiting pulpanddeckel.com. That is pulpanddeckel.com. And if you mention I'll Have a Beer and Talk, we might hook you up with something special.
This kind of just hit the blogs very recently, but I would like to share the ridiculousness of this with you. It's just shy of being pizza tech, because it's not actually involving fast food.
Okay.
But it is the same kind of wacky technology things that the companies do to promote themselves. So, actually, you know what? I'm going to say it is pizza tech.
All right.
So, Engadget says that Japanese noodle company Nissin, famous for Cup of Noodle, which... this is why I think it should be considered pizza tech, because cup noodle is a comfort food and made real fast. They have made a smart fork.
Smart fork, you say?
Yes, a smart fork. It pairs with your phone over Bluetooth. And
wait, the fork?
The fork.
Pairs with Bluetooth?
Pairs with your phone over Bluetooth. It has, I believe, a microphone. When it senses that you're slurping your noodles too loud, it will tell your phone to make a loud noise to cover up the slurping.
What kind of loud noise?
It actually doesn't specify. I'm wondering if it's just an even louder slurping noise, although that would
that would
kind of defeat the purpose. I mean, it's rude in Japan to slurp your noodles. So
I thought the opposite was true.
Huh. I'll have to look into that. But again, this is being marketed in Japan, so this is why I'm like,
okay.
So yeah, it pairs with your phone, plays the sound over your phone. The smart fork is not waterproof, so you don't want to... I don't really understand why they decided to do that. It's called the Otohiko, which I'm sure I just mangled that. The battery lasts an hour, so you better eat your noodles in under an hour if you want to cover up any loud slurping. And it's $149, US dollars equivalent.
You have got to be kidding me. What? There's no freaking way I'm going to spend $149 on a loud fork.
It might be a cultural thing. It's a gadget, you know.
Yeah, I can think of a lot of
Japanese love gadgets as much
fun
as I do.
Gadgets that would not cost me $149. $49.
But Bluetooth and makes noises.
No.
And involving food.
These no. are
fantastic things. And the concept was inspired by, and this is another real thing, Japanese toilets that make noises to cover up other noises.
That is, I can have a better appreciation for.
So you're saying the concept doesn't quite translate well outside of that
realm? Yeah, no. I'm not going to go into like our noodle shop and pull out my smart fork and be like, oh, here, it's going to play Staying Alive when I start slurping too
loud.
I'm
a really sloppy, noisy eater. I'm just going to bring my smart fork with me everywhere I go.
I also think that's like, I have a problem sometimes with gadgety things, especially when they're expensive, because it's like, all right, so there's fun and then there's just ridiculous. And like, what can you do for the world with $149 that, you know, give noodles to people, buy $149 worth of noodles for people to eat that don't have food? Like, it just is.
But I can show off my smart fork.
No. The hard pass on the smart fork.
I think they should make a device that people can combine with their bus passes. So if they're too loud on the bus, they got drowned out by white noise.
Well, that I might be able to get behind.
Yeah. I need something to cover up the sound of my burping here. So we have a third beer to open. And what I have is Stone Brewing Company's, and I don't think if we looked up the pronunciation of this, I believe it's Zocoveza. It is an imperial stout inspired by Mexican hot chocolate.
Mmm.
It is 8.1% ABV, so this is good to save this for last. And it is brewed with cocoa, coffee, peppers, vanilla, cinnamon, and nutmeg.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm going to try to open this near my microphone. Unless you want to, oh, yeah. You're in a better position. You're at the beer mic. That's right. Oh, and we should do the transition while I remember it's here. All right. We're transitioning to the beer mic for the opening. Hooray. Excellent opening.
Smells good.
All right, it is pitch black. It smells like coffee. And a little bit of chocolate notes in there, too.
Yeah.
Tan head and...
Sorry, I just poured it real fast in there.
So. Yeah, we have half head and half beer. We're trying to wait from the settle a little bit, but down the hatch.
Mmm. I'm glad we saved it for last, because it's definitely like the dessert out of our flight of beers.
Chocolate notes, coffee notes, it definitely had that pepper in there. It's like when I can get the Aztec coffee, Mexican coffee at the coffee places that time of year, which I love.
Yeah, like a Mexican mocha.
Yeah, nothing like a little spice in the morning.
Yeah.
So this would be a good morning beer.
Yeah, actually it would.
Yeah, stout. Yeah. Start your day with a stout. Although the 8.1% might not quite well with a morning commute. But.
If you're going to walk to work, maybe this is a good option. Okay, my final story this evening is going to be about another mind-altering substance, but it's not beer. Can you guess what it is?
Wine?
Nope.
Liquor?
Nope.
Liqueurs?
All right, so it's not something that you can drink, but it is something that could change your state of mind. It's magic mushrooms.
Whoa.
Yeah. So this story on The Verge, Angela Chen wrote about how there is some research going into magic mushrooms fighting, helping people that have depression fight their symptoms of depression. And maybe this is a way to rework some of those neural pathways. What I liked about this is that the research that's being done with patients at Imperial College of London have had, you know, good, positive experiences for the most part, but that it's a small group, so they would definitely need to do more, you know, a bigger control group and study this more. But the research so far is promising.
How large was the group? Do you know that?
Yeah, let's see. I think it was 20 patients, so really small.
Hmm.
But the reason I think this is promising, I guess, is because, like, you know, depression is no joke. And I know there are lots of different ways that people are trying to figure out how to manage it.
The most effective way to deal with both with therapy and as well as with drugs.
Yeah, ways that are sustainable. And magic mushrooms being a way that is not like having to take a lifetime worth of some kind of substance, you know, like a pill. But it's a way to possibly like disrupt what's happening in the brain so that the brain can like basically fix itself, which is exciting because it's taking something that's out there in the world that has probably been used for not necessarily this particular application, but just in general.
Use this as a way to expand your mind.
Yeah. And maybe sometimes you need to expand your mind because your mind is doing bad things.
Yeah, you get locked into these cycles and you need to be able to get outside of that and kind of look at things new. And that's the best way to do it. Just a little like a little turn it off and on again kind of reset.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, they're careful to say like, you know, you may not want to go to a rave and do a ton of magic mushrooms that may not have the same kind of positive effect as this study. But they're still working on doing some comparison tests with other drugs just to kind of see what the response is.
I remember there's been a lot of recent articles popping up about research with microdoses of LSD also having the similar kind of a beneficial effect to human mentality, basically.
Yeah. And I couldn't help but think about, you remember that movie Medicine Man with Sean Connery?
Or the one where he found the cure for the plague of the 20th century and then he lost it?
Yes. Set you up perfectly for that one.
I could say lost all day.
That there's these things that are, I mean, obviously people have been taking mushrooms recreationally just to have fun and loosen up in their mind. But that there are things that are out there that we don't know necessarily, both in the plant and animal kingdom, that could really, and I know you sometimes talk about these things on the show, that we're still, I mean, that's cool that we're still figuring out that there are ways to make our lives better with the stuff that's already here.
Well, yeah, like finding the new forms of medicine just from bacteria all around us, even from a Dalek's eye stalk or from the dirt of an old castle. Yeah. There's still lots of things, especially like deep in the forests, that could help a lot of people like permanently. We've got to fix our priorities. Everybody should take a little bit of mushroom and kind of reassess what's actually important.
Totally.
The Ferengi way of acquisition of wealth, or the way that we need to get at to get the Star Trek utopia future by all helping each other.
You know, I'm there with you, man.
All right. So also speaking of mind-altering substances, although one that's a bit closer to home, such as booze, Business Insider says that drinking some booze can make you speak other languages better.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Mais oui!
That's right, you spent that semester in Paris.
Une année, s'il vous plaît.
Like a many years ago. I was going to say a thousand years
ago. It was a year, that's what I said.
But when you went to Paris, it was back in...
Yeah. But I was there for a year, not a semester.
Oh, yes, a semester year. That's what I meant. So you can attest that a little bit of what's called the old Dutch courage...
En français.
Oui. Yeah. Si. This was published in a study in the Journal of Psychopharmacology, which sounds like a really ripping read on a regular basis. Mm. The study involved 50 Germans who had been taking Dutch language classes, and they were randomly given a pint of alcohol or a pint of non-alcoholic placebo. Then they're asked to speak Dutch in front of two native Dutch speakers, who I assume are Dutch, like native Dutch people as well. Being native speakers, they would have to be Dutch.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you can be a native speaker of English and not be, you know.
True, and I think the Dutch brothers that own the coffee places aren't actually Dutch.
Oh, man.
Again, I don't know where that came from. So the groups that got the alcohol were rated significantly higher in their ability to speak the language, specifically on their pronunciation of Dutch words, compared to the sober group.
Okay.
Strangely, all the Germans, when asked to rate themselves, didn't show any difference between the drinking and non-drinking groups. They rated their own opinions the same. And them being Germans, they probably said they were very efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to wait for the angry emails about that. So this gives some anecdotal proof to the cultural meme, I guess, of needing a wee belt of liquid courage to achieve success. Although one killjoy of a professor involved in the study cautions, higher levels of alcohol consumption might not have beneficial effects on the pronunciation of a foreign language.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, any language, really.
It just kind of all slurs together, because that's what happens when you have a high level of alcohol consumption going on. So I would like to test this.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to try speaking a phrase in Klingon. I know a little bit of the pronunciation rules of Klingon. But I'm not fluent in it in any way.
I can attest to that.
So I would like you to just give me like a sentence to speak in Klingon. Something, a normal like English human sentence.
Okay. Happy birthday, make a wish.
We'll just type it into the translator here.
Something every Klingon would totally say.
Okay. Kostlich kutul net.
That was it?
Yeah, I don't know if I got the inflections correct, right? But Kostlich kutul net vnech.
Yeah, that's a good go, yeah.
All right. Any Klingon speakers listening to me, please point out all the errors I made with the pronunciation of that. Thank you. You have to have a lot of phlegm going on to speak Klingon. The only phrase that I can ever really remember is, where's the chocolate, which is nuk-da-kuch-da-pol.
Again, something I don't think any Klingon would be saying, but okay.
Oh, and hello is nuknech.
Do they say that either? I don't know.
You got me.
None of these seem... It should be like, we are at war, and this is my ship now. Get out.
And kapla!
I don't know. We've been watching the new Star Trek and
Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access.
There's all of that Klingon speak in there, and
the long scenes of all of them speaking Klingon, yeah. And we have to read the subtitles, and they speak really slow.
Yeah, I know that's your beef. I was just gonna say, like, I haven't noticed a whole lot of, like, you know, banter. It's pretty straightforward.
It's very Shakespearean.
Yeah, like high drama. This is what's happening. Serious business.
Not, did you see the game last night?
No.
Did you see that ludicrous display last night?
No. Oh, but that would be awesome if they just had like a sidebar of that in one episode. Maybe we can send in some notes.
Yes, yes, we should. Dear Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, have you considered?
Well, we each did our three stories, and you know, because I know from experience with working with more than one person other than myself that the show does get a little bit longer than normal. So the animal stories were actually folded into our first stories, crows and goats.
Yep.
So that is it for this week. So that just leaves me to do my call to action.
Dun dun dun. Dun.
If you are still listening at this point, I'm going to assume that you enjoy listening to me drink and talk. So let me offer you a proposition. Help me make the show, and I'll continue to do so. I'm all about choice, so here's a few options to support me in my life's mission to drink beer and learn things and tell you about those things. First, my voice is for hire. I can do voiceover work, voicemail messages, media correcting, bad singing, and you know what? Some adequate audio production. I figured out how to make this show. Maybe you want to make a show, too. If you feel you have a use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddeckle.com. That is G-A-R-Y at P-U-L-P-A-N-D-D-E-C-K-L-E.com. Rates are reasonable. Also, this show is on iTunes. I'm sure you've heard of it. Just search for I'll Have a Beer and Talk, and you can rate and review the show. Give me 5 stars, please. It makes a difference. The more the ratings I have, the more the show might show up as a suggestion for people looking for shows of this nature involving beer and tech and funny animal stories and all the strange things I have learned how to do over the past 100 episodes. And the more ears that listens to me gives me an incentive to keep talking and drinking. And if you believe what I'm doing here is worth about 20 minutes of your attention each week and want to show your approval by financially supporting each episode, you can become my patron and donate at least $1 a month to the show. That's like 25 cents an episode. What else out there gives you 20 minutes of joy for a quarter? Miss Pac-Man at the laundromat? Come on, hanging out with me is more fun than that. Probably. If you want to throw some money at me, you can do that at patreon.com/ihabitradio. That is patreon.com/ihabitradio. You'll be joining other listeners that already support me there. Those who I thank profusely. Y'all are awesome. So thank you, wife, for coming down to the bunker and drinking beer with me and having probably our most low-key conversations. We usually go off on these multi-minute long rants about things.
All the things.
Because you know, you're an artist. I'm technically an artist. Yeah, we have feels.
So many feels.
So many feels. Disgusting. Well, so it's time to...
My pleasure.
But thank you. Thank you for making the long, arduous journey down the access stairwell.
To the center of the core of the intergalactic studio. The
subterranean.
It's not intergalactic not in space down yet. Here? Okay.
Well, that means it is time to go, and there's the going music. Please tell your family, friends, neighbors, pets, plants, aliens, and Halloweenies about the show and that they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to Gary@PulpandDeckle.com or on the Twitters and Instagram at iHabitRadio or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/iHabitRadio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!